Hey, BQ here, dropping a disclaimer again this week. I do not know what's going on where the my podcast microphone is not the one recording for whatever reason. Happened last week, happened this week too, even though the settings were in my favor. So we'll get it done soon, but enjoy the review.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the King of the Mountain Podcast Slammiversary Edition, reviewing the show from last night. I've got Terrence from Southeast with us again here, and Ro the Great will... I'll add him in a little bit later. He's running behind, and we're going to add him and do this three-way. But right now, just me and Terrence. And Terrence did a really good job on the podcast last week, so I had to bring him back in. Terrence, man, let's get right into this with Slammiversary. I haven't got a chance to talk to you a whole lot about it, so I don't know your thoughts. But what were your overall thoughts on the show?
Old school TNA at its best. That's all I can say. It was it took you back to the early years when they first started the weekly pay-per-view, and to the point where they went on what was that, FS1 at the time. It brings you back to those days. You know, it was just wow. I mean, what more can you say? I mean, you heard this is awesome chance. And when the last time you heard that in the Impact Zone? So just wow, and thank you, Jeff Jarrett. That's it.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. It's been a little while since we heard the This Is Awesome. And I think the This Is Awesome chant is really I don't know if overexposed is the right word. It's it doesn't mean anything anymore for the most part, because it's like it happens almost every match, what it seems like, in other promotions. But in the Impact Zone, we have not heard that in quite a while. And I don't think it happened outside of the first match, but... just the fact that it happened, period. No, I think it happened, the Holy Shit chant, I think we got that during...
Yeah, we got that. We definitely got that one.
Yeah, so it was great for everybody to wake up a little bit, and it was a pretty good Impact Zone crowd. I think there were points where they were out of it, and we'll get into that for sure. But this was a great show. Man, there was only one match that I really didn't care for. And we'll, when the time comes, we'll get into that, and we'll see which ones you really liked and didn't like. But I was very entertained. This is the first pay-per-view that I've seen in a while, because I was at the last Slammiversary. I was at the last Bound for Glory. So this is the last pay-per-view I've seen since, like, Bound for Glory 2015, I think. So I was appreciating it in a different way. I think I liked the other ones better because I was there for them. So it's hard for me to say. Like, for you, was this better than Bound for Glory and Slammiversary last year, just watching from home?
Man, that's tough. That's tough. I think I'm going to put it in the contents of, I think this pay-per-view had more riding on it. I think it was more specialer because of...
Specialer.
Special. because last year they were going through the thing of... the ownership, who's going to have ownership, is Bound for Glory going to go on? So it sort of was a field of, is Impact going to be here? Where this show, you had to build up, you knew the ownership was in good hands. So this was more of a special show, so to say, that you knew come tomorrow, the light still was going to be on. So I felt this show was better in that text, that we knew it was going to be a tomorrow, where last year we really wasn't sure from day to day what we were going to get after the pay-per-view. So I felt this pay-per-view set sort of a tone of a changing of a guard, that this is who we are now. So I would have to get an edge to this pay-per-view in a sense, just because of those factors. But nevertheless, it was a good pay-per-view. Was it better than last year? Maybe, but I just think this one just had more of a feel that everybody was on board with this show, compared to we were fighting against other company and the hate online, where it was more positive going in for this pay-per-view than any other pay-per-view.
Right. As you said, this felt a lot more special. And the last couple pay-per-views were more like an episode of Impact on steroids, so to speak. I mean, there was nothing, you know, other than the build up to the show, it wasn't anything crazy. Because like I had said, I don't know if I said it with you or on a different show, but last year's Slammiversary, I thought the build was better, for what they had to work with, but they were trying to get us excited for Bram versus Eli Drake, and the Bram babyface character wasn't that interesting. They're getting excited for Grado and Shira versus the Tribunal. They had some matches they were trying to get us excited for that weren't really that exciting. And it's the roster is a lot deeper this time around. They brought people in, and you're right. It's just a much more exciting feel to it. What did you think about the commentary?
Man, well, I mean, you saw anything I posted last night, man. I mean, I thought the commentary was good. I mean, you know, to have Robert Flores out there, a guy that I know he has a history of, you know, has been a fan, and he's done, you know, other sporting events, but to come across as this is first actual live pro wrestling call, and Don West, you know, the king of cliches. I mean, I thought it was a good commentary booth, man. You know, so I wouldn't be unhappy if those guys did another show, felt in, or if, you know, TNA started to do some type of specials. I wouldn't have a problem with Don West and Robert Flores. I mean, I thought it was really good, you know, and compared to what we heard over there with the New Japan broadcast, I thought it was excellent.
I enjoyed it. I thought Robert Flores was missing a little bit of a punch. His voice almost fades into the background there were times where I don't know, maybe it was a good thing, a bad thing, whatever, but there was times I was more focused on the action and I forgot people were talking, which, yes. I mean, I guess that's a good thing, but
that is a good thing.
But there were times, I guess, I don't know. I think there's kind of good and bad to that, but they did a good job. I think he slipped up on a lot of things. I mean, we got a Chris Masters, we got TNA World title. We got there were a few things he said he slipped up on, but
a few things.
But
with the EC3 of a hell, with title to EC3 of a hell, you know, things like that. But
yeah, I think Don West called him EC Carter at one point.
Yes.
Yeah, and then he's kind of stopped for a second because it was almost like he's replaying it in his head. He's like, wait, EC. Okay, no, that's not right. little bit of rust, but I have to admit, I did miss Josh Matthews in a booth a little bit and JB. I'm just so used to their voices, so I kind of miss what they do bring to it. But you know, hopefully this is the end of the bickering and everything. We can get back to just like them calling professional wrestling. But so, did you get a chance to watch the pre-show match? Okay, so I missed most of this because I was watching in the Fight app and I didn't know that. I mean, I heard the rumblings of a pre-show, but I didn't. I figured I had the Slammiversary pay-per-view pulled up, you know, and the countdown was going, and I didn't realize the pre-show was on a completely different channel or whatever. So I opened up a new tab on the internet and I pulled up pre-show and it's like, oh my God, and it was in progress. So. Did I miss anything? I think I read online the owl flew around and stuff, but I don't know if I missed anything or not. It was in the middle of the match when I turned it on.
Yeah, he didn't miss anything spectacular from the pre-show. It was just the mixed six-man tag match. KM, of course, took the loss. But, you know, it wasn't anything spectacular. It was just, pretty much continue to get over Ali and Braxton Sutter character, which they... You know, seems like they got very big plans for those two. So, you know, other than that, you know, they did a lot of building up for the show itself. And, you know, I mean, you know, very rare you get a pre-show from a TNA pay-per-view. You know, I don't remember last time they did that with an actual match. So maybe that's the direction they'll be going forward with.
I hope so. Seemed like the crowd was pretty engaged. Seemed like the action was pretty quick. You know, like from what I saw, they're moving with purpose.
Yes.
I kind of would have liked to see Ali get the, you know, we got to get some kind of payoff on this angle at some point. You would think Ali would have got one over on Laurel, I like that they, from what I saw now, I tuned in for the second half, that Ali was more portrayed as a wrestler this time instead of someone learning to wrestle.
Yeah, she was.
Oh, okay. I was hoping that was the case for the most part. I don't even remember Shira being in this match. I think Kongo went over the top rope with him or something like that.
Yeah. You didn't get that much from Shearer in his match for some reason. All
right, so they brought him down to earth.
I guess something sort of. But I heard Grado's on his way back, so
yeah.
maybe not.
And maybe we'll get a dance off this Thursday. So, but, you know, Braxton and Allie are actually my two favorite stars in the entire company, so I was happy they got the win. I feel like it wasn't until I read this online today that I really pick up on this, but do you feel like under the new regime they have pulled back on Allie? Not pulled back, but it's like, I'm not saying they're not pushing her, but it feels like the momentum is not there like it was previously.
I think you got to look at it as twofold. I think one, you had Maria was there, so that was a part of the angle where she was Maria's sister. Maria kept her down. Then you got to look at the changes that was made with that when they left. And I think what the question is where they're going to go next with her. Is the Laurel Van Ness thing over with? You know, or is Allie going to be thrown into full knockout competition? What's the deal? You know, but, you know, there again, also, you got to look at also factors, you know, that the other factors that they've been incorporating a lot of new talent. They did the unification title match last night. They have been shuffling, you know, different knockouts in, not many that we have really noticed getting the push. Well, she's right there. Outside of her and Sienna, I mean, she's really number three. And I know Gail is coming back, but she's still right there in the thick of it as far as airtime, exposure, popularity with the Impact Zone and the fans. So I really don't see them taking that much away from her, but you got to wonder where she goes at from here if this feud is over with between her and Laurel Van Ness.
I was really happy to see that Laurel had the mist on the dress. I think there's some storytelling here because we've seen Allie, this is like the third week in a row now that she has chased Laurel with a kendo stick. So I think Thursday we're going to get the blow off there. And I think it's going to be some kind of clusterfuck match. No DQ or some kind of street fight or, which I don't know how well that works because we just got the no DQ match. We just got a street fight last week. So That's just my assumption, you know. That's kind of how they blew off that Gail Kim and Maria storyline. They did something. I don't know if it was a no DQ or what the rules were for the match exactly, but yeah, I kind of think they're going that route with it. I mean, they can't continue to have her coming out this kendo stick if there's not a purpose for it, you know. So I feel like the packages they put together for this show was done better than any of the lead up to the pay-per-view. It's like they could have incorporated a lot of that into the episodes of Impact and everything. So
I thought they did a good job of all the packages. You got to give them credit, you know. That's all I got to say. You got to give them credit for the packages that they produced. I mean, you got to give them credit. They was right on point. And, you know, they hit a home run with the Packers.
Kevin Sullivan's doing a killer job. I was mortified. I was looking at my Periscope, and it showed that he viewed one of my podcasts, which he could have watched 5 seconds of it for all I know. But he was a viewer of one of my shows, and it was from about 2 weeks ago, and it was probably my most negative review I've ever done about the product. One of the India tapings that I didn't like. I was mortified when I saw his name on there. Like Kevin Sullivan was a viewer. I was like, oh my God. Hopefully he tuned out after like 5 seconds. So I'm really hoping so. So the opening match of the evening was the GFW tag team title match. So we got LAX against El Hijo de Fantasma and Drago, Marufuji, Ishimori, Garza Jr., and Laredo Kid. So I think this was the match of the evening. I thought it was going to when they put it together. I thought it was a little slow to get moving at first. Like they were kind of doing some weird stuff, but man, by the time like it really got into this match, I mean, there were so many moving parts. And I, first of all, I didn't understand the format, like the rules. Is this, I think I heard them say they're using something rules, but I don't know if it was Lucha Libre rules. Okay, so they can come in, go in and out as they please. That's weird. I haven't watched like the Lucha Libre, like Mexican wrestling, since I was little, like a teenager. So, I can't say I really follow AAA and Crash. I would watch them if I had them available, but I mean, I don't. So yeah, I was very confused at first because I was like, wait, where's the tags? And then I remember I heard them say something. It's contested under something rule. So I would kind of like to know what those rules are exactly, because there was almost no rhyme or reason to them. It felt like if someone rolled out of the ring that someone could come in. But then after that, it was completely to the wind. Like it was, people were just coming in as they pleased. And then it got to the point there was no tag. I mean, no one-on-one action whatsoever. But what were your thoughts on the match? Were you as impressed with it as everyone else seemed to be? Are you there? Okay. Were you as impressed with this one as everyone else seemed to be?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's, like I say, that reminds you of old school TNA. I mean, the action was fast-paced. The moving parts. I mean, you couldn't keep track because it was a move here. It was a dive here. It was a flip here. It was a near pin. I mean, it was crash and burn, brother. I mean, it was what TNA was meant to be. And now that it's Global Force, it's Impact. I mean, they put on a show. And for an opening match, that was a hard match to follow for the rest of the pay-per-view. But, I mean, if you keep all those teams around, or you let each team have a feud with LAX, you know, I mean, you're going to have a good tag division. And I don't know if that's possible, but just the elements you got out of that match, the action, the competitiveness, I mean, it was just total nonstop action. And this is what the tag team divisions need to be. It doesn't need to be big guys that can't be athletic. It need to be guys that can fly around. It need to be guys that's going to excite the crowd. It's going to have everybody on the edge of the seat, whether it's This Is Awesome Chance, whether it's, you know, This Is Wrestling. I mean, this is what they really needed. And to start off the pay-per-view with that type of action is just a thumbs up all the way around for me.
I think this is where promotions, you know, such as the company, such as Ring of Honor, even Lucha Underground to an extent, I think this is where they win, when they start mixing in various styles into the match. And I forgot who I heard say it. It was about a year ago. It might have been Bret Hart. I don't know. Saying that, like, with the WWE developmental system, like, they teach you to wrestle a certain way, like, their way. Right. And it gets to the point where, you know, years ago you had people come in from different areas, and now they're, like, developing you their way, and that's it. And if everybody learns, you know, the same ingredients to cook with, you know, everyone's food tastes the same. So, or it has the same ingredients to cook with. So, you know, we saw a lot of offense in this match that we don't see, you know, in American programming or on Impact. There's just a lot of moves we have not seen before on the show, or some people have may not seen before, period. And there were some people who thought this was going to be a complete clusterfuck. And there was a couple moments, you know, Drago slipped off the top rope. That was one of the worst top rope mess-ups I've ever seen. But I think that I've heard one of the X Division stars said to jump off their top rope is difficult because since it's a six-sided ring, the ropes are, like, you know, further apart in the corner. So it does take some practice to understand how to jump off them. But yeah, he crashed and burned pretty bad off there. But they were able to play it off, and they didn't do what they do so many times in wrestling, where if there's like a botch, they try to redo the move. They find a way to redo. Right. You know, they just continued on with it. And I think that makes it a little more believable to where he didn't, you know, he fell. Because you have to, there, so many times in wrestling when there's a botch, they start, oh, well, maybe, you know, they start over analyzing it. Oh, maybe the rope was, had some sweat on it, or maybe he was dizzy. like Jerry the King Lawler was the worst at that. He would just continue on. Continue on. You know, so they kind of like, okay, he fell. That was it. They didn't try to like make excuses, nothing, and then they just continued on. So really good job of the commentary there. But I think everyone expected LAX to win this thing, you know, because if you don't keep them strong, it's like that complicates the booking from here on out with guys from other companies. Yeah. I'm gonna add Ro the Great into here real quick. Hey Ro, you there?
Yeah, what's up, man?
All right. We're talking about the tag team title match right now. We're actually just getting ready to move on from it. And I'm sorry to just throw you to the wolves here, but what were you thinking about the GFW tag team title match?
Man, you know what? That really got the pay-per-view going, man. I mean, you know, I don't remember the guys' names and stuff like that, but I like those type of matches. I had high expectations for it, and it, you know, lived up to it. It really got everything going. And I know some people would say, I know one of the Lucha guys, what is his name? I forgot his name.
Drago. I was just talking about that.
Yeah. You know what? Because I had watched it with a friend. I don't think it hurt. If anything, I felt like everyone was excited and stuff like that. And, you know, stuff happens. But overall, man, a great match, you know?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Diamante got injured in this one. I don't know what it seemed like. I don't know if she just hyperextended her knee or she. I don't know what happened. It was a very routine kick. And made me think of the time Blake Griffin just, in his rookie year, just dunked the ball and came down, was out for the season.
You're not talking about his rookie, what should have been his rookie year, right?
Yeah, like he just dunked, came down, kind of held his knee, like it was like a freak accident, and then he was out for the year.
Yeah, I think with Diamante's, I don't think, because after, you know, I had read some reports, it looked like she, you know, it was nothing severe, but it looked like, because she was going for like a big boot. And I thought it was a hyperextension, but hopefully she's all right, though, because I really, you know, want to see her, you know, chop it up in the knockout division.
But you notice Konnan also said after the match that they were going to add a new member, but that never really happened. So did you get the information that TV Guide kind of spoiled a few things? Because I think that might have changed the plans a little bit on that, because he teased it and it seemed like it was going to have some kind of effect over the night, and then nothing happened.
Well, according to TV Guide, and, you know, what's actually crazy is didn't only spoil for this upcoming Impact, but as well as the next week's, too. But according to TV Guide, the actual announcement for the new member, it was going to be announced on this upcoming episode of Impact. But, you know, my thing was, and, you know, we've talked about this before, man, like, I honestly think they got to, like, Jared and company, they got to figure out how's this stuff leaking like this, because normally – excuse me, when you hear about potential spoilers, it's usually like, say they advertise a card a couple months from now, and like where somebody might be champion, and one could assume like, okay, well, such and such is going to drop the championship. But these are actual storylines, man, and you know, it was just weird. You know, normally it was just like, oh, who came out of Slammiversary the champion, you know, tune in this week. But to actually have like what's possibly going to be happening, like, they really got to figure out who's leaking this stuff.
Yeah, because I've never seen the preview. Like when I'm watching on TV, when it shows a little preview, you're right. It says like who won at Slammiversary. I've never seen it be specific before, ever. So that's absolutely insane. Who are you thinking or hoping it's going to be? At first, I thought it was going to be El Patron, because I thought it was going to happen at the pay-per-view, and I figured, oh, well, it's got to be an important spot, so I guess it's the main event. But what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You know what? Initially, what I had thought, I said, you know what? If El Patron wins in the main event, I could see a situation where we get a double turn. Because I don't know, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, Lashley, like, he's more of a tweener to me. He's not really a face or a heel. Like, I see him as a tweener because he gets cheered. But anyways, I thought they might do a double turn and, you know, show El Patron aligning with LAX and kind of do like a, you know, a Mexican-America type of takeover. But, you know, yeah, you know, it's really just up in the air. Maybe somebody like a Kingston or somebody we haven't seen or somebody new debuting, you know, it's going to be interesting.
It would be nice if it's Kingston because, you know, the DCC thing didn't work out. It would be really cool if they added him to it. I think it'd be perfect. We got the strap match after that. Ethan Carter III and James Storm. Was this strap match, did it live up to expectations for you? Did you think it might be a little more brutal?
You know what? It was like, you felt like it was a grudge match, but I just kind of, the only thing I took away from it is just like, you know, really, you know, I don't want to say what are they fighting for, because obviously I get that, you know, EC3, you know, he's the now, and James Storm is, you know, what the company used to represent.
The then, yeah.
Yeah, the then. So, but, you know, it told a story and stuff like that, that this is his time now, you know. Like I said, you know, I hate to, you know, bring up old ideas, but I just felt like, you know, had a title been involved with this one, I think it could have meant so much more. It just kind of felt like, and then another thing too, I think this match would have been surge positioned if it would have been the match before the main event, because all the promotion leading up to Slammiversary, this match along with the world title unification match, those were advertised as the two biggest matches. So to have it placed right here, it just kind of just seemed, you know, not that it didn't matter, but I thought it was supposed to be one of the two biggest matches. So
I thought the match was good. I mean, I didn't think it was a bad match by any means. I thought they worked really hard, but I thought it was missing about another minute of storytelling. So when he pulled on the strap and Storm hit the corner, it would have been nice if he were to get some color. That would have helped a lot. But because he didn't, if he would have found a way to, you know, beat his ass for another minute, that would have made a little more sense when he dropped at the end.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was missing like a minute of storytelling. And if it had that minute in there, I think it would have been masterful. What was the name? He hit that. I thought he was going for a one percenter. He randomly hit the, what's it called? The angel, fallen angel, or.
You know what? It was funny because it's a combination. I think he was thinking of, I remember Kid Cash used to do the Moneymaker, and it's kind of like, it's a double underhook kind of pile driver, but I think that's what he was going for, but he landed like the angel wings. I mean, it was cool. I mean, maybe that's another finish that he might be using, which is good because, you know, we've seen people kick out of the one percenter and stuff. So that's cool for him, you know, to diversify his arsenal and stuff. So
I think he needs it because the one percenter, which is actually a move I like quite a bit, but it works better on mid-sized guys, X-Division guys, like the heavyweights have a hard time taking that move. Even Mike Bennett did, and he wasn't a big guy, but it always looked like shit with him. And so I do think he needs something a little bit different.
I think the point of that, I didn't mean to cut you off, sorry, man. But I think the point of it, that move, is when you have a move like that, you can hit it on anyone. Like, if he were to use that double underhook driver or, you know, sit-out thing, like, how many people is he going to be able to hit it on? I mean, I guess majority of the roster, but just say if he were ever to feud, and I know they're both heels, but if he ever were to feud with Kongo Kong, can you really buy him hitting that move on Kongo Kong? You could see him hitting the one percenter, but that move, I mean, you know.
Yeah, James Storm's a big guy, so, I mean, if he got him up in it, I think he could get a majority of the roster, but I do think the move doesn't always look very good, and maybe it's because he's so much bigger now than he used to be. Maybe that's part of the problem. I like seeing James Storm use the one percenter. I thought that was pretty cool. It'd be interesting to see where they go with this. I almost thought they were going to have Steiner take him out on the way to the ring. You know, that would have been pretty cool. I stand by my my prediction. I think James Storm is going to be done at the end of the year. I know that his contract is up at the end of this year. For all intents and purposes, if you read his interviews, I'm pretty sure he's heading to NXT after this. I'm there's a completely different way from how he delivers his interviews now to back when he, you know, came over to Impact. Well, they offered me more money, it was this and this. And now it's kind of like, oh, it didn't work out, you know, but the door is open. Like, I'm almost positive. He's done everything he can do. He's probably going to get a little quick world title run, and I'm sure of it that he's going to move on. And I really think that the way they're going to do it, I think he's going to feud with EC3 through a majority of the year, and I think he's going to lose a career match at the end of the year.
So you don't think if he got a final world title run, you don't think that would be a you know, a way of trying to keep him on board? Because I, you know, whether or not, you know, he stays with the company and stuff like that, I've always kind of just pictured him, since he's an original, maybe, you know, he would take more of a backstage role, you know, maybe be an agent. I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't know what his career aspirations are. But if he does leave, I at least hope, you know, they give him one good, you know, title run and stuff like that. So at least, you know, he could feel like, hey, you know, he got that one, you know, big world title run. Because his initial one, it was relatively short, if I recall, when he beat Kurt Angle and stuff. So, I mean, but hey, I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, I've enjoyed him with being in the company and stuff. But if he wants to venture out, you know, more power to him.
I think it's going to happen. I think EC3 is going to win the world title from El Patron, hold it for a few months. I think he's going to drop it to Storm at Bound for Glory. Storm will hold it for a little while, and then I think they're going to have a rematch at the end of the year and career match. I'm very much calling that right now. So, no DQ match. Jeremy Borash and Joseph Park against Josh Matthews and Scott Steiner. How did we not see this coming? The whole final deletion, not final deletion, but a Great War angle. I'm not a single person I know called this, and I almost feel like, duh. How do we not?
Well, you know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, continue.
The only thing I was going to say is, here was the thing. What made this be so good, because remember we talked about this a couple impacts ago, about, you know, this match, like, oh God, this is going to be, you know, so horrible. You know, you just hope that it's serviceable. And it was really good. I mean, what they did and stuff like that, like, you know, with the cameos, with Shark Boy and Father James, like, you know, the one thing that was predictable, you know, we knew Joseph Park was going to, you know, turn into Abyss and stuff, but it was serviceable. And, you know, Scott Steiner, he didn't have to do too much, because I think that was kind of one of the fears walking in. Like, you know, we know Scott Steiner's old, like, can he even, you know, give a belly to belly anymore? So, you know, it, for what they did, it was very creative. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was expecting that. I think it was probably one of the most entertaining matches of the evening. Everyone seemed, for the most part, seemed to really enjoy it. If you understand the way Impact has been doing stuff as of late, especially with, you know, obviously with the Hardy stuff. I read online today that they're coming close to an agreement with the Broken Gimmick or whatever. I think the dumbest thing they can do, and what they most likely will do if they have it, is they will rush it and overexpose it. Because with TNA and Impact, the biggest part of that gimmick was the storytelling that led up to it. You know, there was a whole reason to why he became broken, and I could see on the WWE stage him just like them completely rushing it, because they're not going to spend months on it like Impact did spend 3 months on it. They're not going to do that. So I could see it be rushed. I can see it overexposed, and I think this match here showed how much, like, obviously Matt was the brainchild and he was the on-screen character, but I think this here showed how much JB was in the driver's seat for the big segments, a Great War, a final deletion, and all that. So without that vision, the gimmick's not going to be the same if they use it.
Well, I even think, like, personally, you know, and I read the same story too. I mean, I'm at the point, you know, just let them have it. I don't think, and even when they were still part of Impact, I kind of felt, just my opinion, you know, people can disagree, that's fine. I felt like it lost some steam once they turned face. I thought, you know, when they had when Matt was heel and he was having Jeff, they were competing, trying to compete for the tag team titles. And he would have Jeff do all the work, and Matt would just sit back and, you know, trying to bite people's ears off and possessing people and whatnot. I thought that's when it was at its height and stuff. And then, you know, even with the final deletion was fine too. But I felt like, you know, towards, you know, up until their, you know, run ended, you know, it was losing some steam. And I think, you know, if they get it back, you know, if it works, cool. But I don't think they will get the TV time that they got in Impact to put the towards the focus towards it, like, you know, like how they did in Impact, because there's so much going on, you know, with, you know, whatever they got going on over there. So, you know, in Impact, it was more like the focal point pretty much. You know, there's times, you know, we'd kind of complain as fans sometimes, like, damn, you know, do they have to take up the whole show, you know? So, and I can't picture them getting that much time over there. I could be wrong. I mean, I'm sure somebody will tweet it. I mean, I'm not, that's not something I tune into. So, you know, whatever. But I mean, if they come up with a deal and that best serves Impact, then hey, more power to them.
Exactly. And I'm over the gimmick. I mean, it's old news to me. But, you know, if they work out something that works for everybody, you know, awesome, good deal. But I think most people know it's not going to, it might initially, but it's not going to get over the same there. It'll hit a bigger audience, but it's not going to be the same quality of gimmick. But so this match, I was pretty impressed with Josh's athleticism.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
me too.
I was worried when he wrestled the Indian Jobber because he looked like he couldn't work. And I wish they would have gotten Josh Matthews maybe a better opponent for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this match, he looked a lot better. I mean, he showed some athleticism. I think the two parts that were really funny to me was when he took the backdrop into the pool.
Then, yeah, that was tight.
Then JB hit that flip. And then the other one that really made me laugh was when he went up for the Swanton and missed it. Like, I knew he was going to miss it. He had been hyping, I'm going to hit the Swanton on JB, and you knew JB wasn't taking a Swanton. So I don't know just when he like went up for it, I knew exactly what was coming and he missed it. I thought it was pretty funny, but I mean, surprisingly enough, the matches worked pretty well. The Joseph Park character in the ring is, I mean, he's a character who can't really work, but he sells it with the facial expressions and everything. I mean, he really sells that.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, the thing that I just kind of hate in this, like, you know, we all kind of, I'm sure we all know by now, you know, Joseph Parks, Abyss and stuff like that. I just kind of just feel, and it's the same thing I'm sure people complain with when they're talking about Ali. It's like, you know, these people can work, and it's like to watch them try to, you know, trick us into believing they don't know how to work. It's just, you know, it's kind of cringeworthy, you know, but, you know, hey, you know, it was entertaining. I enjoyed the match. That was one, you know, like I said, we had talked about, you know, we thought it was going to be the stinker, and, you know, it turned out to be one of the good matches.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I guess I should have said this a second ago. Terrence is not on the call anymore. We're having some technical difficulties, so Ro and I decided we're going to press forward, and if I'm able to get him back in, I will, but we're just going to press forward and knock this out. I was hoping to do a three-man thing, but not working out, so Scott Steiner with the fat asses and everything was, it was entertaining. It's funny how much he says that.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of over, you know, it was kind of overkill at one point, but I just said, hey, he's Scott Steiner. I guess the way that they were trying to use him is being old and senile and stuff like that. So, you know, but it was, like I said, it was good. It was really entertaining. You know, my friend and I, when we were watching it, it's like, damn, you know, this was a match, you know, you thought was going to be the stinker and turned out real good. So, you know, good job, everyone involved.
And with Shark Boy and Father James Mitchell, you know, that added a lot to it. I think the I would kind of hope they keep him around because the Abyss character is, when he was with Decay, he really needed that overhaul. He needed that change because the Abyss character was not working anymore. And I remember from when I used to watch WWE that, you know, Kane was this really cool character. And then once he took the mask off, and it was never the same when he put it back on because that degree of mystery was gone. It just didn't work. and it never worked. And I feel like when Abyss put that mask back on, that was the first thing I thought of. And it just, he just looked like Joseph Park with a mask to me. You know, like I didn't feel that he was transformed into Abyss necessarily. It was, I wasn't totally buying it, but the match was great. And it was a lot of fun. And I look forward to watching that one again. Full Metal Mayhem was up next. This was my favorite match of the evening. It was it was probably a couple minutes shorter than I would have liked. It seemed like it might have been a little bit rushed, and I think the one, if I had to really nitpick, was the placement of this one, because when they introduced the Tax, we just saw Tax. Josh Matthews took Tax the match before, and which was great. That shows a dedication between Josh and JB to the company. And to introduce the Tax again was a little much, but it was a different spot. I mean, they start pouring it down his throat, you know, which was really cool. But what were we thinking about Full Metal Mayhem?
You know, it was great. I mean, at first I had my reservations about it because like, why, you know, you're having this tag team match, you know, intergender tag team match. I can't recall when I've ever seen one like that. But it was cool. Told a story. You know, both couples hate one another. There were some moves, like I think the one where they poured Tax down Eddie's mouth, and Davey kicked him. I cringed because it's just like that. It looked like it hurt so bad and stuff. And then seeing is it Alexa? Is that how you pronounce it? Or Alicia? I'm sorry. I think she did a splash to Angelina. And I was just like, wow, you know, like I thought the guys were going to do most of the heavy lifting, but the women delivered too. I mean, it was really well, nicely put.
Alicia's a little daredevil. She did that cross body off the top and she got some air.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like a ring general and, you know, everything, that's not really her thing, but the high energy, the jumping around like that works for her. I do like her a lot. Her and Angelina did a great job, and I thought the match was really well done. I think it was maybe missing a little bit of drama that we needed, but that's because I think it was a tad bit rushed. I feel like this was the one where, like, hey, we need to cut short a little bit because you know, maybe we're running over or whatever. Here's the match that I thought was the stinker of the evening. And that was Sanjay versus Loki, the X Division match. I was so bored watching this. Now, at first, I had tweeted out, I haven't seen storytelling in an X Division match like this in a long time, and I still stand by that. It was storytelling instead of, like, running and flipping and diving and jumping, but we needed some of that, and it never got to the next gear. Every time that Sanjay started making a comeback, it was gone in 10 seconds. And it reminded me of like 80s wrestling where the heel just dominated the entire match, put him in headlocks for half an hour, trying to choke him out. The babyface would make a comeback and then lose it. It was booked very much like that. And I really think that's what they were going for. I just don't think it worked. What do you think of the match?
I thought, you know, after the match was over, because at first we were watching and I watched with a friend, and it felt like it was missing something. It never got into that second gear. I'm of the mindset, after the Full Metal Mayhem, the matches following, I think the placement of the matches kind of hurt the matches itself. Like, I kind of felt like this match, had it been, you know, right after the tag match, or even if it had been the opening match, I think it would have been received different, because I felt like up until this match, all the matches, man, were just, you know, they were, you know, had everyone just going, you know, I was really into everything leading up to this. And then this was a match where, you know, the flow, it felt like the flow changed, you know, all the other matches, high energy, you know, the participants involved. And I don't know if it's because, you know, the high flying aspect or whatever, but, you know, it just felt like when it got to this one, and it wasn't a bad match, you know, it did tell a story, you know, you know, as far as, you know, the history with, you know, Sanjay's eye and stuff like that. But I just really think the placement of this match hurt it more. If had it been anywhere else on the card, I think it would have went over better than it did.
It really took the crowd out of the match, and they didn't bounce back until halfway through the main event. They were sitting on their hands for this one, which caused them to end up sitting on their hands for the Knockouts match after this. I think the one positive I'm going to say is that every fall was not rushed. There wasn't like the bullshit falls that we see in these where it's like they hit some, you know, garbage move. Like, you know, like Matt Hardy's Side Effect hasn't beat a single wrestler and ever since he's used it. But if it was like a 2 out of 3 falls match, he would have got a win with that. You know, so we didn't get any bullshit unbelievable falls. So I think that was cool. I think the finish where he did the springboard into the Warrior's Way, that was excellent.
Oh, yeah.
I actually thought Low-Key was going to win this.
Me too.
Dare I say these two, for me, maybe just don't have chemistry because I didn't like their first match. So I don't know if there's something that these two are lacking in the ring together.
You know what, for me, the one thing I look at it as is, you know, when we think X Division, I think a lot of times we think of, you know, high flying action pace, but we kind of forget, just, and this stems back to the old WCW Cruiserweight days. For every Rey Mysterio, Kidman, Ultimo Dragon and stuff, you had your Dean Malenkos and other guys who were mat technicians where they didn't rely on the high risk moves and stuff like that. So I think when you're talking with Low-Key, and Low-Key's a guy that I would think moving forward, it might be time to elevate him. Hell, I think you could even put him in the main event, you know, have him challenging for the world title and stuff, just because with his style and stuff like that, it's not an ideal X Division style, you know? And that was just my thing, because I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking the same thing, like, you know, if Sanjay was working with maybe a Trevor Lee or Andrew Everett or a Matt Sydal, I feel like we would have been more on our feet and stuff. So maybe it is, you know, just the styles don't mesh well together. But that was just what I took away from it. I said, you know what, maybe, you know, Low-Key, 5-time X Division champion, maybe it's time to elevate him, you know, grand championship level or hell, you know, world title picture. You know, it'd be something fresh.
And you make a point, and I've made the point on the podcast too, the X Division is also, it's a lightweight division. It's a cruiserweight division. It's not necessarily run and flip and jump and dive. And I've said that I don't really care for that kind of wrestling. I like it, but I don't like the choreograph, like the Ricochet and Will Ospreay. Like, that I don't like. That's, you know, the dive just for the sake of it, because that's what the X Division was last year, is a really slow-paced match, and then to make it X Division, they would do a dive or jump over the top rope just to do it. I don't like that. If it has a purpose, I'm good with it. So I think everything made sense in this match. You know, they didn't do anything they didn't need to do, but it was just, for me, extremely boring. I think the best thing Sanjay ever did was shave his head, because when it was shown those old clips of him with hair, like, he just looked like some jabroni. I mean, but I do think they really took, and I talked to a few people in the Impact Zone. They were pretty bored for this one, and they agreed that it took them out of the match, or they were out of the match, and then it bled over into the next one, which was the Women's Championship match. They called it the GFW Women's Championship. They did not introduce it as a Knockout. So I hope they're not retiring the Knockouts name. That would really suck. I hope it's just GFW Knockouts. I really hope they don't do that. I think most of us like that name very much. This match, a lot of people hated this match online. I didn't. I think wrestling fans want to book the card way too often. And sometimes you need a finish like this. You know, yes, the crowd is bored. Rosemary had an amazing entrance.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's you know, for me, this was kind of, if I had to say one match out of the night that really kind of just like fell flat for me, it was this one. not so much just because of the outcome, because I like Sienna, but I just kind of feel like, and I know you had said, like, when there's a difference between losing a one-on-one match and losing in a tag team match, because when you lose in a tag, it's like you lose it as a team. But I mean, if Rosemary was going to lose, I would have rather, especially with Laura Van Ness coming out and Ali coming out, I would have rather her, you know, a distraction roll-up. I know a lot of people hate that. Just so it could extend the feud, because I felt like in some ways having her tap made her look weak. But then again, too, I was thinking, I think with Rosemary, and it's the same thing I say with Lashley, they're better served as tweeners, because I feel like even when they're heels, they still get cheered. You know, people like them. And I think, like, Rosemary, you know, interacting with Allie, like, you know, their allies and stuff like that, I feel like with Rosemary being portrayed as, you know, the demon that she is, having her portrayed as a face, it just in my opinion, we can agree to disagree, it makes her look weak. I think, you know, this loss, maybe it makes her get her edge back. And she's, for me, it's just she's better served as being neutral. You know, like, I don't think she should be face, or he'll just have her, you know, being a neutral wrestler. But that was just my thing. It was just like, you know, if you're going to have her lose and stuff like that, I didn't think that was the way to have her lose. But you know what? She had the belt for, what, 200 and something days? I mean, can't be champion forever. So, and I have no problem with Sienna being, you know, the first unified, we're hoping, Knockouts champion. But,
I have no problem with it either. I mean, I'm a big Sienna fan. She's probably my second favorite behind Allie. So, I mean, I was happy in that sense. I think Rosemary was coming close to breaking the record holding the belt, which, you know, I kind of wish she did. But I was okay with it. I mean, I personally liked the finish. I thought it was really creative. I just think it lacked drama. I think Laurel's element to the match was really unneeded. And I think it took away from the focus of the match to where they could have, you know, better served that 60 seconds combined to mix it up in the ring. But I like the whole idea of her choking on the mist, how it was coming out of her, you know, between Sienna's fingers, and then she blinded her with it, which I don't think that got over to the crowd exactly what she did. But I thought it was creative. The submission move that Sienna used in the MMA world really should make you tap out. Like, that's not one of those. So, like with El Patron's cross arm breaker, because I used to be a combatives instructor in the military, and I used to teach people that move. That move, if you really put that on, you tap out immediately, unless you're double jointed. There's no rolling around and all that bullshit. That is an immediate tap. And I'm kind of glad they told that story with Sienna's submission move, but I think at this point she just serves better as the dual champion, because you don't want to keep Rosemary with the belt for several more months until Bound for Glory. I mean, I think it's good to have Sienna with the belt. Rosemary can maybe get it back, and then her and Gail Kim can do business at Bound for Glory.
I just think, too, it was just like, to have, when I seen Allie run out, I thought, okay, maybe this will be a way where Allie and Rosemary start feuding. Like, I think to have all that interference and not it affect the match, that it just didn't make any sense. Because, like, when I seen her come out, I was like, watch, Rosemary's going to be distracted. Then Sienna's going to capitalize, and then she wins. At least in that way, you're looking as like, okay, Rosemary's now going to, you know, have issue with Allie. And then, hey, you know, now you got a new feud going on and stuff like that, because they really got to pull the trigger on Allie. I don't know how much longer can you do the Allie, Braxton Sutter, Laurel Van Ness, KM, and Congo Kong. But yeah, and to see Laurel Van Ness even run out too, that's when I seen it. I really think that really put the dagger in the match too, because it's like, what are you doing? You know, like, but, you know, it is what it is, man. I mean, like I said, congratulations to Sienna. I think she'll do fine. And I think, you know, we're probably going to see a whole new layer in Rosemary's character, seeing her chase the belt. So that should be interesting.
I think that'll be a lot of fun. One match we forgot to mention here, I skipped over for whatever reason, was Eli Drake and Chris Adonis against D'Angelo Williams and Moose. I think this was done really well. Because, you know, Moose should have done a majority of the work, and he did. He took a majority of the punishment, and he did. But I think Daniel Williams, you know, for anyone to not be impressed with what he did, you know, this was the best showing by a celebrity by far. He did an excellent job. You know, overshot a couple moves like the cannonball and the corner and everything, and obviously the big splash to finish the match. But were you as impressed as everyone else was?
Dude, this was like one of my favorite matches on the card too. Once again, it was another match where I walked in like just be serviceable, because you know we've seen so many you know, celebrities when they get in the ring, they're limited, or you know they, you know, the established wrestlers looked as a goof, you know, to make them look good. And you know, he was getting beat down some. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, whether it was the frog splash where he jumped too far or the cannonball, the fact that he was even attempting those moves, that, I mean, to me, that was what was impressive, because a lot of times you see it's a suplex or a clothesline or a ground elbow, yeah, hip toss, like, you know, wrestling 101 basic moves and stuff. So for him to do those moves and feel comfortable to do those moves like that, you know, that exceeded the expectations of the match. Like I said, you know, I walked into it just saying, just be serviceable. And I'm just glad Eli Drake didn't eat the pin. That right there, I was like, all right, once I seen it was Adonis, I'm like, all right, cool. I'm all right.
I think the reason he overshot is because he jumped off too quickly. Like, he climbed to the top and then he jumped immediately. And I thought that was really good, that the way that they brought Eli Drake back and put him through the table. So it was almost like they were acknowledging, okay, it didn't quite, you know, it didn't happen the way we wanted it to happen, but we're still going to give you the ending that was intended. But, you know, and the entrance was really good. Did you know the cheerleaders and Rosemary's Zombies were the same girls?
You know, I didn't see till somebody had tweeted when they were giving thanks and stuff like that. But, hey, that's cool. I mean, I didn't notice.
Yeah, so that was really cool. But, you know, both entrances were cool. I really thought those were cheerleaders. They didn't look like wrestlers to me. So a lot of fun. I think, you know, I'm not familiar with the player, the big white dude that came down to the ring with him. Like, he is so awkward.
He's a free agent. He used to be a tight end for the Browns and stuff. And was actually crazy was the first time he appeared on Impact. You remember when I think they had an interaction with Davey. And, you know, of course, you know, trolls came out. But he appeared on Impact. And then I want to say the next day, the Browns released him. So, you know, of course, it was like, oh, well, you know, you appeared on Impact. So that's why you lost your job. You know, whatever. But yeah, he's a free agent and stuff. And, you know, same thing with D'Angelo Williams. But I think you know, he's probably – I mean, we don't – have you heard any news as far as – you know, was this a one-off or is this something that he's trying to pursue? Because I was of the mindset that maybe he's still trying to land with an NFL team, because I know, you know, he's been chasing a Super Bowl championship. But if he were to decide a second career, man, I mean, from what we've seen and stuff like that, I mean, just as a first match, could you just imagine the time and just getting better working with vets and stuff like that? Like, he could be a really good addition, man, to the roster. So
he really could. And from what I understand, it was a one-off, and he's fully intent on playing in the NFL. The other guy that came down, I think he was like a NASCAR driver or something. He looked so out of place. It was almost like they grabbed a fan and had him walk out, and he was kind of like half smiling and like, oh my God, I'm on TV. Like it looked kind of silly, but the match was a lot of fun. I felt really bad that Eli Drake slipped on that springboard, but at least he didn't, you know, eat it. He landed on his feet, and they played it off. And of course, he did a great job. The crowd started chanting, "You fucked up," and he went along with it very well. I remember last year he fell off the turnbuckles. He was sitting on it to like poke fun at the crowd, and he fell backwards and flipped over. I was told that came off on TV. I know I was there live, but I was told it came off. I have the DVD. I just haven't watched it yet, but felt bad for him. You know, he was trying to say, "Hey, this is the biggest night of the year. I'm gonna knock something out here that you normally don't see me do," and you know, he kind of botched it, and it's unfortunate, but you know, that's just the way it is sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and I think the good wrestlers or the great wrestlers, I'll use the word, is You still there? I'm sorry. okay, I think the great wrestlers, when something happens like that, you know, they don't let it stop the flow of the match. You know, like, because we seen it earlier with Drago when he slipped and stuff like that. Yeah, it sucks because, you know, something exciting is about to happen. But like I said, I attribute it to nerves, man. I think everybody was pumped up, you know, to be, you know, live and stuff like that. So you're trying to go all out and stuff. And those ropes, man, I mean, you see sometimes some of those guys who climb on the ropes and girls who climb on the ropes, you see them, even though when they're up, you know, they'll hold, you know, with one arm, with one hand, they'll hold the rope sturdy to make sure, because you could easily slip. So, but it didn't take anything away from the match. I mean, like I said, it was good. It was better than I expected. I hope, you know, we still kind of get one more one-on-one match with Moose and Eli Drake for the Grand Championship, because that was the only thing I didn't like, was the fact that he was in this match and, I mean, Moose being the champion was in the match and the championship not being defended. I mean, obviously you're not going to defend it in a tag team match, but, you know, hopefully he can get one more shot and stuff, but we'll see.
I'm thinking the same thing, hoping the same thing. He really needs, you know, that mid-card title. That would be great. You know, Moose has had it for a long time. He's been a good champion, but he's had it a long time. And last year after Slammiversary, they did a Gold Rush episode where all the titles were on the line. So hopefully that happens here as well. And Eli Drake, you know, gets what's coming to him. So final main event, champion versus champion, Lashley with King Mo versus Alberto El Patron with Dos Caras and El Hijo Del Dos Caras. So, I thought the match at first looked like a huge clusterfuck as far as all the people coming down, that they didn't, like, really serve a purpose. And the crowd at this point was still out of it from the X Division match. They, at one point when the cross arm breaker was on Lashley, you could hear all of a sudden the crowd woke up. It was extremely obvious. But I think they were still out of it, especially from Jarrett coming out there talking, which he didn't talk very long, but you could hear a pin drop when he was out there speaking, which I thought he would at least get a hero's welcome, but, you know, that didn't really happen. But,
well, what was the point of that anyways? Like, I thought him coming down, because, you know, we had all heard the news, you know, this past week as far as, you know, the company will be now identified as GFW. I thought him coming down, I thought that's what the announcement was going to make, because even when I was letting my friend know, he's like, they're changing your name again. And I was just like, you know, yeah. And I kind of gave him a, you know, rundown of what was going on. But I felt like he could have, if he was going to come down, he should have used that time to explain the change that was going to happen. Because if you were a casual fan ordering the pay-per-view, you know, you're hearing the unification of GFW and Impact and stuff like that. You know, if you're not familiar with GFW and stuff, you're like, well, what are they unifying? You know, unifying. So I thought he could have done a better job explaining the changes that were going to happen, so, you know, people, you know, who maybe don't follow the product like, you know, we do, or a lot of us fans do, you know, have an idea of, you know, the changes that are about to happen, you know. But
yeah, it would have made a lot of sense to get some clarification on the GFW thing instead of just randomly throwing it in there. This is a perfect time for him to step out and say, hey, this is what's going on. So that's not what happened. But I saw some people say these two lack chemistry in the ring. I thought they worked extremely hard in this match. I didn't, at no point was I like, oh, these guys are just clunky. Like, I thought, you know, Alberto did the dive to the outside and missed. How often do you see people miss that move? Like, that's a safe move. You dive, the guy semi-catches you. It's very rare someone misses that and just hits the ground. So
yeah, it you know, this match for me, I mean, it was okay. I think, you know, and like I said with the earlier matches, as far as like the tag and whatnot, I think with all the high flying going on early in the show, you know, you have to realize not everyone works that kind of style. So this is like, it's a heavyweight bout. So, you know, a lot of the crazy stuff that you've seen earlier in the program, you know, you're not going to see. But, you know, yeah, with that dive, you know, to take that bump, you know, you don't anticipate, you know, veteran wrestlers, you know, older wrestlers and stuff taking moves like that. Usually you see young guys taking, you know, bumps like that. So for him, for El Patron to take, you know, the bumps that he took, man, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
It was. I thought the inclusion of King Mo and Dos Caras was really awkward. I'm laughing because someone tweeted that at King Mo, like that he'd I just retweeted. I don't remember exactly what he said. Basically that it was, you know, didn't do a good job and shouldn't you be training for a fight somewhere? And King Mo responds, how about next time you step out there for me, step your game up or something like, it was something along those lines. It was a good comeback. I retweeted it. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But I thought it was a little awkward just because with Dos Caras, I felt like he reminded me of my grandfather, like chasing me around the house with a slipper, but he wasn't that fast when I was in trouble, you know, like it was just a little awkward. But I think, yeah,
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. And I think it was cool having them there, you know, added something to the fight.
But see, there's my thing though. I just kind of just feel like having them ringside, like it had, you know, has me to believe, or it would have some people to believe, like one of these guys is going to have they're going to be a reason for the outcome of the match, one of their involvement. And that's the thing that, you know, when you have, you know, someone in the corner or the interference, like it, to have the interference, it needs to determine the outcome of the match in some type of shape or form, because it's like otherwise you just have people there. And if they're not going to have any outcome in the match, like what reason does it give? Like, say, Lashley. Really, if El Patron's dad's not, you know, and I know El Patron's the face of the match, obviously, of the feud. But if he's out there and he's not really a threat, what's the point of, you know, doing anything? And I guess, yeah, he's playing the heel, and obviously heels, you attack the, you know, face manager, whatever, like that. But I just felt like, and then even with King Mo, like, what did he really do? You know, if he's supposed to be in the heel's corner, you know, I'm looking for him to pull the referee out or, you know, maybe give a low blow when the ref's not looking. But he was just there, you know. I mean, I don't know. But that was just my take.
1 second, I'm sorry. I'm wrapping it up in the next minute or so. And then the match ended with the best finisher in professional wrestling, the double stomp. Awful. I didn't think that was going to get... I thought he was going to kick out. I mean, it was out of nowhere. So, awful finish. I thought the celebration at the end was a little awkward, too. Like, Sanjay came out.
Well, the first thing I'll say is I think the stomp last night... I've never seen the stomp used so much in the same event, because you had Loki, and we know that's Loki's finisher. Then in the same match, you had Sanjay, and I mean, I know it was a different one because he did the moonsault version, and then I don't remember if Davey did it, but then you had El Patron. I really thought, I'm like, okay, El Patron, this match, he might, you know, whether it's a frog splash or he's going to bust out something we've never seen him do before. Because normally in big matches and stuff, you know, main events, you know, your guys, they tend to, you know, do moves they don't normally do. Like Lashley busting out the AA from the top rope, or Death Valley Driver, I'll call it that. Doing that from the top rope, who would have seen that coming? You know what I mean? And I found it funny because when I used to follow him where he used to work, that was a move that actually beat him one time. But, you know, normally you pull out all the stops. You know, it's going to take more to beat who you're facing, you know, at that stage and stuff. So for him to win like that, I mean, look, you know, El Patron's a champion. You know, I was talking to some people on Twitter about it, like, because a lot of people, you know, were pissed about the outcome. My thing is, I'm willing to give him a chance as long as he's a proud champion and he gives us compelling matches. You know, because one thing I loved about Lashley's run, and as dominant as he was, he needed to lose eventually. I felt like with this, they booked themselves in the corner because, yeah, like it was time for Lashley to lose a belt, but I don't think El Patron should have been the guy to beat him, let alone the first unified GFW champion. But the one thing I loved about Lashley is even though his matches, you know, he as dominant as he was booked, like there were some matches he'd face people. It's like even with the match with James Storm, you know, the story was, you know, EC3 costed James Storm that match because James Storm had it in the bag. Even when he was feuding with Eddie Edwards, and Eddie Edwards, you know, got some wins on him. The cool thing about Lashley, as dominant as he was, he didn't make the other guys look like crap. And that's the only thing I can ask for with El Patron. Whoever he feuds with and stuff like that, make these guys look good. You know, if you do that, I think the fans will get behind him. Because, you know, the bitterness is going to be, you know, you let this guy, he came from another company, and right away he's etched into the, you know, the main event. And then he's undefeated. I mean, could he have at least eaten a loss leading up to this, you know? But, I mean, that was just my take on it and stuff. And I think they could have, if they could have really swerved us and let Lashley retain, and I think it would have went over well. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, the Alberto El Patron Global Force champion era has begun. So I was, the last thing I want to say, I was disappointed we didn't get the new titles. So I thought Gail Kim's inclusion into the Knockouts match was kind of unnecessary because she wasn't handing a title over as advertised. So hopefully we get him in this next episode of Impact. I don't see why we wouldn't. I'm pretty sure we're going to know what they look like tonight, you know, with the spoiler. So we'll see. But good pay-per-view, really good pay-per-view. I think it really delivered. I only saw one person complain about it. Cage Side Seats, which is super anti-Impact, gave it an A-. So, you know, I don't remember last WWE pay-per-view that got an A rating. So, I mean, not that I'm paying attention, but there was a long time I followed the company. And, you know, there's always 7 out of 10, 7.5. So, great effort, great job. And we're going to see what happens when Impact, next episode of Impact Wrestling comes on this Thursday. And the Global Force Wrestling era has begun. So, for Ro the Great, this is BQ. Thanks for checking out our coverage on Slammiversary. And talk to you guys next time. Peace.